I would argue that change does not happen here collectively. And I don't get me wrong, worship is great. This is key. It's vital. And yes, it can prompt us to change. Yes, it can be responsible for some of our change. But this is more of where we worship. It's more of where we encourage. It's more of where we challenge. Most change takes place away from the public assembly. So as I said, let's start with me. Where will I discover the most change in my spiritual life? And I would argue that it is one-on-one with Jesus. Turn to the story of Saul of Tarsus, and we're going to look at the version that he tells in Acts chapter 22. Where does he begin his change? The first account of this is in chapter 9. What is he doing up until that point? Chapter 8, he's wreaking havoc on the church in Jerusalem to the point that the disciples scatter all over the world to avoid him. Chapter 9 opens with him chasing them around the world. And he has letters to travel and to arrest them, to bring them back bound to Jerusalem to stand trial for their faith. It's in that process that we find him in chapter 22. And I want you to notice that his change begins on the road to Damascus. It's not all of it, but that is where the change is affected. I am a Jew, he tells in Acts 22 and verse 3. Born in Tarsus of Cilicia, but brought up in this city, educated under Gamaliel, strictly according to the law of our fathers, zealous for God, just as you are today. And I persecuted this way to the death, binding and putting both men and women into prisons. And also the high priest and all the council of the elders can testify. From them I received letters to the brethren and started off for Damascus in order to bring even those who were there to Jerusalem as prisoners to be punished. And so he's just recounted what I was telling you took place in chapter 8. It came about that as I was on my way approaching Damascus for the purpose of arresting Christians, about noontime, a very bright light suddenly flashed from heaven all around me. And I fell to the ground and I heard a voice saying to me, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? I answered, who are you, Lord? He said to me, I am Jesus the Nazarene whom you are persecuting. Those who were with me beheld the light to be sure, but they did not understand the voice of the one who was speaking to me. And I said to him, what shall I do? The Lord said, arise, go into Damascus and you'll be told all that has been appointed for you to do. But notice, all of a sudden, the purpose for his journey has changed. It has changed from pursuing the church to, Lord, what must I do? One-on-one with Jesus. Now then, listen very carefully, especially those online. Neither you nor I are going to have this type of one-on-one with Jesus. He's not going to jump out in front of you on the middle of 72 and stop your car and have a one-on-one with you. Special time, special place, special purpose, and even in the case of Saul, a special individual. My one-on-one, though, can be just as powerful, just as change affecting, and it comes from Scripture. Every time I open this book and encounter Jesus, I will be changed. I will either be changed for the better I will find something that needs to be fixed. I'll be challenged by it. I'll be encouraged by it. I'll be educated to change it. I'll find something in the life of Jesus that I'm lacking or something in my life that's not supposed to be there. Or I'll be changed for the worse. I'll have those same encounters, but I'll be hardened or angered or frustrated. But it's one-on-one. I'm going to argue tonight, and I want you to take this to heart, that if there is something in your life that needs to be changed, as important as it is that you're here, as important as it is that you're in Bible class, and that you do everything that the church does collectively, I would argue that if you really want to change your life, it's going to come through personal Bible study. It's going to come from sitting down with the Master. Now, there's a second part to this formula in the life of Saul of Tarsus. It's Ananias. Continuing on in chapter 22, Paul by this time tells this story. Since I could not see because of the brightness of that light, I was led by the hand by those who were with me. We came into Damascus. And a certain Ananias, a man who was devout by the standard of the law, well spoken of by all the Jews who lived there, came to me. Standing near to me, he said, "Brother Saul, receive your sight." The very time I looked up at him, he said, "The God of our fathers has appointed you to know his will, to see the righteous one, to hear an utterance from his mouth." That's the part that had already taken place, that had begun the change. "For you will be a witness to him, to all men, of what you have seen and heard." But notice there's more to come. "So why do you delay? Arise, be baptized, and wash away your sins, calling on his name." Saul put himself in the right position to learn more. He took the instruction. He went to Jerusalem. He put himself at the feet of another devout man, and he had been raised underneath the feet of Gamaliel. And so now he's being taught by a Christian, and he's being encouraged, and he's being mentored. I think of it a lot like the eunuch. The eunuch is there in his chariot, and he's studying, and he is going as far as he can. He is doing all he can do to affect the change in his life. He's even been to worship and on his way home, but he needs Philip to explain further. Saul needed the rest of the message. Jesus did not convert him on the road to Damascus. Jesus did not finish the change that has to take place in his life. So I'm going to repeat. Yes, I need to come to worship. Yes, I need to be in Bible class. But one-on-one with Jesus, in the morning with a cup of coffee, or at night, or whenever it is that you do it. One-on-one study with the Son of God. One-on-one work with a mentor or a study guide or videos or audio recordings by faithful gospel men and women will do more to change me than all of this put together, because I'm meeting Jesus face to face. And it's the same with our evangelism. Have you ever stopped to watch Jesus work? Just to go from Matthew chapter 1 through the end of John and watch him walk the road and interact with people. Yeah, you're going to find chunks, Matthew 5, 6, and 7, where he's preaching to the multitudes. You're going to find the times where he feeds the 5,000 plus. You're going to see him in the temple. You're going to see him in the synagogue. But what I want you to do, if you'll do that study, is watch many of the deeper life-changing moments in his ministry were one-on-one or in really small groups. Go to Luke chapter 8. Luke chapter 8 is one of those places where he's addressing a crowd. We get the parable of the sower. But what I want you to notice is after that, when it comes time for the life change, verse 9, his disciples, that closer group than the multitude, began questioning him as to what the peril might be. And he said, okay, to you it's been granted to know. So he steps away from the crowd. And he steps into that small group, that one-on-one with Peter and that one-on-one with Andrew. And he begins to explain things to them so that they're changed by the message. Chapter 19. Famous story. What? The story of Zacchaeus. And Jesus is walking down the road, and there are crowds. What does it? They're lining the street to get to him. He's got a mass audience. There's so many that the little man's had to climb the tree to see him. Out of all of that crowd, how does Jesus handle it? John got it. I saw it. He handled it one-on-one with Zacchaeus. He said, I need you to come down out of the tree and let's go to your house. And let's take care of this in a personal way. I need to change your life for you. He had the crowds thronging to hear him, see him, touch him. And he takes the time for the one. And it's the one out of the crowd that nobody wanted to go to lunch with. It's the tax collector. John chapter 3, one of the greatest conversations in history. It's the passage that's got, you want eternal life, be reborn. It's got John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave. It's not in the Sermon on the Mount. It's not at the temple. It's what? It's one-on-one with Nicodemus. We give one of the greatest lessons in history, and at the moment it's delivered to a single individual. Chapter 4. Argue every bit as big a moment, because he's about to reveal, I'm the one everyone is looking for. I'm the Christ. And it happens where? On the outskirts of town, by a well, one-on-one with a Samaritan woman. Pause for a second. I'm going to give you a call. We want to change the world. It's going to be one-on-one. The world's not breaking down our door, no matter how many times we invite them to be here. Jesus stopped for a lone widow at Nain to change her life. He stopped in the midst of a crowd walking down the street where people are jostling to address one Syrophoenician woman. To the point the disciples think he's lost his mind. This woman's crying after us. Tell her to hush. Let's stop and talk to her. One-on-one. He left 5,000 plus. 5,000 men. So when we do the math, you know, the married men and children, he leaves a crowd of roughly 10,000 people. And he tells the disciples, let's cross the Sea of Galilee. I need to go deal with a man in a tomb. I need to go change the world one person at a time. the small groups. Where do we see him? He's with Mary and Martha and Lazarus. At the tomb, with the crowds coming to be with this prominent family, he's with Mary and Martha. That list can continue for half the night. If you go through the Gospels, what you're going to find is Jesus constantly looking eyeball to eyeball with somebody and changing that individual's life. Jesus spent a lot of time with individuals, with small groups. And I think it's key to notice that his followers learned the lesson. They learned it well. Peter and John stopped on the way into the temple for one lame man. The early church, Acts chapter 8, we've already addressed this. They went what? They went house to house. When they spread out over the world, they didn't put up a tent on the square and say, now everybody that wants to know anything about the truth, come down to the square and we'll worship together. Not that there's anything in the world wrong with that. But they went house to house looking for people who were interested in the message. Our story, Acts chapter 16. It is a beautiful story. And Ed mentions part of it. You know, the day may be coming where the rod is mine. Where I'm the one who is beaten for my faith. And will I be willing to take it? Will I be willing to continue to sing praises at midnight after I've been beaten? But the part I want you to notice, the doors are thrown open. And you're Paul and Silas. You've just been beaten. And freedom is right there. What are we doing? Honestly, every last one of us is bolting for the door. You better get out of the way because I'm going to trample you. I do not have any desire to be before the magistrate again. I've seen how that works out. And Paul and Silas stop for the life of one man. Don't kill yourself. We've got a message for you. And he is so moved by the fact that they've been singing at midnight and the fact that they're concerned for his welfare and the fact that they haven't run off that he says, tell me more. And they go to that small group situation and they convert his entire household because of a one-on-one experience. Again, I know I've touched this on class, but I want to drive it home. Yes, we invite. Yes, we invite. Yes, we invite. We invite to worship. We invite to our meetings. We invite to our lectureships and our vacation Bible school and our seminars and our fellowships. But we cannot think that that takes care of the mission. We cannot expect that to move the world. The days when, and even though it wasn't the truth, on the days when Billy Graham can go to the Colosseum and fill it with thousands just because he's there and people are thronging to come hear it, are over with. We go have a tent meeting. Had one at Elkmont a couple of years ago. Do you realize in the few nights that we were there, how many people from the actual community came at our invite? We had a really good meeting. It's going to happen one-on-one. We can't neglect this work. And let me tell you this. Worship, gospel meetings, seminars, lectures, those things are more effective when we have already primed the pump. When I've already built that one-on-one relationship. When I've already spent time nurturing a soul. And let me show you the difference. For just a second, we're going to play act in your mind. We're not going to do it on stage. I want you to put yourself in the shoes of a visitor. Maybe you come at an invite. Maybe Angie's invited you. Or maybe you just wander in because something told you that this was the day you needed to go to worship. All right? And it could be a couple of different things. Maybe it's your very first time to visit a worship of any kind. Or maybe you have a background, but it's not the same as the church, so it's your first time to witness New Testament worship. You're coming through. Go through it in your mind. Come through the door. Be greeted by 200 people that you've never met in your life. Find a seat and try to sing songs that you've never sung before. Open a Bible to find scriptures that you've never read before. Find yourself overwhelmed by the religious isms that we use sometimes. If I hadn't explained the word redeemed this morning, the unchurched that were listening would have had absolutely no idea what the word meant. We toss it around like we know. Not everybody knows. So you're the visitor who has no idea. Maybe you're from a religious background that's so different that you're wide-eyed at the differences. There's no altar call. There's no organ. There's no choir. Maybe you got a ton of questions. Maybe you want to know more. You might even be moved to respond, but you're the visitor surrounded by 200 with 400 eyes looking at you, and it's intimidating. We're about to sing. David's going to lead it for me. Hark the gentle voice. And I want you to think about it in this way. How hard it can be to even hear the voice of Jesus in public worship if you're overwhelmed by your environment. If you're a visitor who is so out of place that you don't even know what you're listening for. And think about it. It can be hard for us too. Think how hard sometimes it can be for you personally. And you can take yourself out of those visitor shoes and put them back in your own shoes that you have to walk in. Maybe you need to respond, but you don't want everybody's eyes on you. Or maybe you're distracted by what's going on around you. Maybe like a couple of weeks ago we talked about you bring your millipede to church and all you know for an entire worship period is a millipede. Maybe you've got so many things on your mind with your family and in your situation that when you come in the door that you're really struggling to hear Jesus and to hark to that gentle voice. Go back to the question, where's the change going to take place? It's going to take place in private, one-on-one with Jesus. Now then, you may be able to bring it to fruition here because you've already primed the pump. But if you hadn't spent that one-on-one time with Jesus and you're distracted by everything that's going on here or you're a visitor and you're overwhelmed, so I want you to focus on the one-on-one this week. Focus on it in your life. We've been talking all the way back to January, the idea of conquering this year, making it my year, doing everything I can to win the moment. Focus on the one-on-one part of it. And focus on it as you're trying to reach others. Absolutely, I want you to invite them to worship next week or the next. Invite the kids to Vacation Bible School. As we send out this mailing and we're trying to prime the pump in that way, invite them to be a part of the worship where we're going to discuss what's going out in that mailing. But don't just leave it at that. Spend some time getting to know people and opening doors where they can meet Jesus and be changed through that one-on-one experience. May be that this past week you did a lot of that soul searching. And tonight's the night. Don't be intimidated by the eyes. Don't be distracted. Listen very carefully to the gentle voice of Jesus as he says, "Come unto me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I'll give you rest," as we stand and sing.